Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Yes, I don't know what happened there. Where is Tanya? There we go. We're getting blocked again tonight. Hang on. Okay, Tanya?
All right. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
All right.
We're having a little bit of difficulty.
Marty, will you sing for us, please, once again?
Do what?
Let's sing.
What I
want to give a little intro with a song so we can have that music? You're laughing
it's
music
not,
to my ears, Marty. You know I love you.
All
right. Well, good evening, everybody. Huh, Marty?
Go ahead. Just go ahead and talk.
Okay. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard on Marty Opie's TS Radio Network and Stephen Burke's 89.9 KLRB FM out of Stuart, Oklahoma. I'm Tanya Hathaway, and I'm your host, and we are in part two of Justice for Stanley Watson. Well, let me tell you something. As people from Lawton, where they were wrongfully convicted, or some excessively sentenced, but really what I'm finding mostly is that there has been horrific abuse of power, which is denial of due process, which is public corruption right there in Lawton, Oklahoma. Now, it's all throughout Oklahoma. It doesn't mean it's everywhere, people. I'm not trying to say that. But unfortunately, I do genuinely believe from the years that I have been doing this that there's a lot of active public corruption going on. And if you want to call those who turn their backs on that public corruption, then I would say the majority of people know what is going on and they don't stand up and they don't do anything about it. And if they do, they wind up losing their bar license or they come up missing or, you know, people get in touch with you secretly in code and say, call the FBI or, you know, and then sure, right, call the FBI. Tell the FBI, you know, on Oklahoma when you're in Oklahoma and some of the FBI in Oklahoma likes to contain control over what comes in so that it can be censored and make sure it doesn't go anywhere. And you don't have to go that far with Attorney General Hunter, Mike Hunter. My goodness, Mike Hunter, you know, you can give him everything that leads to judicial RICO, that leads to many instances in many different departments of public corruption, denial of due process, your constitutional rights, my constitutional rights. It's our Bill of Independence. It's our Declaration. It is what we are supposed to be able to count on to stand up for ourselves and our loved ones. It does not mean that somebody else with a title, with a gun, with a robe, with a fancy briefcase that you pay hundreds of dollars an hour to, or the public defender who gets the same paycheck from the paycheck is from the same people that the judge is paid for and the prosecutor is paid for. So, you know, when you're in a system that is consistently, more often than not, violating due process, everybody's getting paid from the same place. Fox and Bird in the hen house. They're all having a big old party in there, ripping the flesh apart of victims.
In the bathroom.
Right? So, first of all, I'd like to say I'm not an attorney. I'm a reporter, I'm an investigator, and I'm your radio show host tonight. I'm an advocate. I'm a whistleblower. And nothing that comes on this show comes on that is not well vetted. That being said, sometimes mistakes are made, and corrections will be made as a result. Feel free to email me at injusticeinoklahoma@gmail.com. Injustice in Oklahoma @gmail.com. Are you a party? Do you know somebody that is involved, that is victim of public corruption in Oklahoma? Denial of due process? Email me. Neither Marty Oakley, Stephen Burke, or myself, Tanya Hathaway, personally and professionally, can be held liable for any error in content. I have with me tonight, I have Jennifer Watson. This is Stanley Watson, Justice for Stanley Watson, Part 2. I have with me tonight Jennifer Watson, who is the wife of Stanley. So, hi, Jennifer. How are you tonight?
Hello. I'm doing fine. How about you?
Good. Thank you for being on. And I'm sorry your mother-in-law does not feel well and won't be on. But hopefully she's listening, and we can make her proud that we're standing up for her son.
Thanks.
And your husband, who you knew when this all happened, but you weren't married at the time, correct?
Yes, ma'am. You're right.
Right. Okay. And we also have with us tonight, I believe we might be having Myron. Well, I know we have Myron Wells. He's on with us right now. So, Myron, you are involved in this case, and originally you might have even been you were taken in for questioning, potentially even charged and flipped to the state's witness, or they tried to make you do that. Didn't work out real well for them. So thank you for joining us tonight, and we're going to hear a lot from you. Thank you for joining us. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. Yourself?
Couldn't be more grateful to have you on, and as well as I'm sure with other, with many other victims that are listening, advocates that are listening, and you know, people who really are ready for change, and ready a long time ago, because this has been going on far too long, and it happens. Of course, it happens in other states. You know, it doesn't just happen in Oklahoma. But we know it to be rampant, absolutely rampant, in Lawton and a lot of other parts of Oklahoma as well. Like, seriously, you know, you could just take an arrow and throw it, you know, like try to pin the tail on the donkey, and there's a lot of tails out there. You're gonna get it. You're gonna get it where all that public corruption is, and it seems to be. An exception to a rule where it isn't. Now, there are some great police officers out there. There really are some great police officers out there. For those police officers, the prosecutors, the public defenders, the judges, for those minority public servants out there that are doing your job and doing it the right way, you're doing it with pride, you're not abusing your power, you really care about the outcome. And what it's supposed to be for transparency, to provide the due process. This isn't about you. As a matter of fact, we just told you to come on with us and let us know how you really feel about all this, because it makes it awful hard for the good guys to do their jobs. I think I heard that Janet is indeed on. Janet Watson, are you on, or is that Melissa? Okay,
yeah,
I think.
Jennifer.
Okay, Jennifer. All right, and I heard that somebody else was on. The producer let me know, but that's fine if she's just listening, because she doesn't feel good if she's listening through the phone. That's just fine.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to have a little bit of a recap here, Jennifer. What was the date of the conviction of your now husband? What year?
It was 2001.
Okay, so in 2001, Stanley Watson was charged with murder. He was 17 years old at the time, correct? Jennifer?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so he was 17 years old at the time.
2001. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And he is still in prison to this day, and he has a conviction of life without parole. So, you know, we know about Mike Gaines. Mike Gaines is in prison for life, but he actually does have life with a possibility of parole, which was just denied, by the way, not that long ago. And it's kind of interesting because at some point they used to tell you why you're denied. But I guess they're not even doing that anymore. Everybody's making their own rules, putting it in writing and acting like that's constitutional. Well, I have an issue with that. And I think you should too. And I do believe that the listeners do too. So there's lots of reform going on and lots of push for reform going on right now in many states. But Arthur Bean is one of the big advocates for reform, and he is a private investigator and works with the Deborah Hampton Law Firm out of Oklahoma, and he is very familiar with this case. He just might give a call in tonight. We spoke earlier, and we are working together on some things. And also, Melissa Hurry. Melissa is a conviction integrity unit expert, and she's got an open invitation to call in and jump in on these shows. And she's probably listening right now, or maybe she's just wrapping up a class because she's just wrapping up her master's, I believe it is. And but she is an expert. This is her world. This is what she does. It's all about the conviction integrity units and hoping to get them in places, especially first where there are actually death sentences. You know, does that make sense? I think it makes sense for people that are like walking that hallway, right? Well, what if they're not guilty, like Richard Glossop, right? What if they're not guilty? What if they have been denied due process too, and they just have each other's backs? What if the man we're talking about right now, what if the man we were talking about the other day, last couple weeks ago, Mike Gaines, and others that are lined up talking about Lawton, Oklahoma, they want to be on next, and they all know you can't come on the show unless you can show that you were denied due process and the outcome would have been very different had you had right to due process, which can be anything from exculpatory evidence being withheld. Exculpatory evidence is evidence that would benefit the defense. That's exculpatory evidence, okay? That happens so often. So often you can tell each other stories. If you hear about, oh, wrongful conviction, oh, let me see, where are you? Oh, okay, you're over there in Lawton. Well, let me guess. Let me see. Was Ken Sue Dorsey involved by any chance? And was Judge so-and-so involved by any chance? Oh, my gosh. It's pretty easy to figure it out. Pretty easy to establish a pattern that you could just guess what it's going to be. But, of course, we can't do just that. You have to look deeper because those are serious, serious crimes and very serious allegations if you are saying that you're wrongfully convicted and you're really not. You're just trying to jump on the bandwagon. We don't let that happen. We need to hear all about it. But I tell you what, when I see it, I trust you people. I trust you. I hope you trust me. I hope your advocates are standing up for you. I know this much. We've got Myron Wells on right now, and he is standing up for Stanley Watson. Myron, why don't you walk through the night when everything happened, kind of give a little bit of a recap.
Well, it all started, we was at a party. Actually, it was a homecoming dance. One of our best friends, Apple Jenkins, was going to a homecoming at MacArthur High School. And we were just hanging out, and we decided to go up there and visit him and take some pictures with him because he was dressed up. And all of a sudden, when we get there, we meet Alfred, and we're taking pictures. Next thing you know, on the side of us, it was a fight that broke out. So the fight had broke out, and it got to escalating with some more friends of ours. So then next thing you know, the guys started pushing on us and trying to bring us in there. So they kept telling us to meet them at a party, that it was supposed to be an after party out somewhere out there in the boonies. So
right.
We were told them that we'll go out there. So we rode out there, and all of a sudden, right when we get there, it was a gate, and they was charging at the gate, and they were saying that we had to pay $5 because they had kegs, and if we wanted to drink, we had to pay $5, and we told them we don't drink because we're in sports. So they told us to pull to the side, and we pulled to the side. It was probably like 3 or 4 carloads of us, and go to the same school. We all play on the same football team, so we all was just friends following each other out there. So next thing you know, we pulled to the side, and my friend behind us, which was name was Krusty, name was Ty, he came in the gate, but when he came in the gate, he started doing donuts in his car. So next thing you know, it was a guy that got on a walkie-talkie and told him that the guy was out there acting irate. So next thing you know, we seen like 15 guys running towards us, towards our way, and all of them was white. So when they started running towards our way, we noticed they had baseball bats in their hands. So we was already out the car because we was talking to the guy that was at the gate and told him that there's no need for that. So next thing you know, they ran up on us, started calling us the N-word and threatening us to hit us with the bats and stuff. So I told everybody, let's just go. So we left. But when by the time we tried to get out the gate, we stopped because another one of our friends had called us and told us that the guy was trying to jump on him. So we turned around. And we came back out there, and we grabbed him. And next thing you know, everybody started running out the woods and saying somebody had got shot.
Shot?
Yeah, that was the initial statement. They said it was a gunshot.
Oh, okay. But it turns out it was a knife.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, so right now, so far, I'm finding out that the initial that area where you actually where this actually occurred is that this. Did you hear the first show?
No, I didn't hear the first show.
Oh, okay, because there was is that area where
I think
it
occurred
it was
out there towards Flowermount Road.
Okay. So that's where this occurred then?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
If I'm not mistaken.
Okay. All right. So I just wanted to make sure that I was clear with where it happened. All right. So, and that's a regular place where people go and hang out, right?
No, it was actually someone's property. It was like a trailer in some woods, but it was gated off. It was a lot of land, but it was someone's property.
So they were inviting you in to somebody's private property.
Right.
And this was from where you originally were at the homecoming dance.
Right. In MacArthur.
Okay. All right. All right. Thank you for that clarification. All right. And do you know whose private property it was? Or it is?
No, we didn't have a clue. It was just everybody was telling us to come. We had homegirls, a lot of people, friends, everybody was telling us to come, but the guy who initially started the fight was telling my other friend to come out there, which was Alonzo Horn.
Right. Alonzo. And he wound up being in a separate vehicle, correct?
Correct.
Right. Okay. So, all right. So it was Alonzo that you went back for?
Yes.
Okay, so somebody called you and said when you guys were getting ready to head out, this is too crazy.
Right.
So neither you weren't drinking. Stanley wasn't drinking.
No, we didn't. Nobody drink. We didn't even pay because we told them that we don't drink.
Right. Yeah, and it's my understanding that you know there. Okay, I knew that there was somebody that was initially a suspect who was had a full ride for a scholarship, and boy, oh boy, those are awful darn valuable, just so valuable. And unfortunately, well, they had said that they would if they basically flipped as a, to be a state's witness, that he wouldn't lose his scholarship, but it was lost anyways. And he wasn't exactly a willing, let me see, Alonzo, okay. All right, so he's the one who had the full scholarship, is that right?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm not sure of that, but
okay.
We all have pretty much had scholarships. I had one myself.
Oh, good for really. Where was it for?
It was I had a couple of offers. Langston, Baylor.
Oh my God.
Bryce. The letters was coming in, so I had options.
No, I know what that's like. I have two sons that are, 19 and 22, and they're the baseball and basketball, and they both have scholarships, and that's a big deal. It's a big deal. You work really, really hard for that, and you can only hope. That's a great opportunity, and what I have found, working with so many of these, I'm very much involved in it. But it's like, one of my sons, you'd have to pull his teeth out to get him to go to school. And now he's just like practically a 4.0, there are just so many great things that can come from team sports and playing on the college level, and of course on high school and levels and whatnot. It keeps kids busy, it teaches you how to work as a team, and same thing as adults, and so you're all there for each other. You went back for your friend who ultimately the suspect knife, it was never entered into evidence. Is that correct?
Correct.
And there was a knife found in his vehicle. Is that correct?
A knife found in whose vehicle?
Alonzo's.
Well, I don't know because I wasn't in the car with him, so I wouldn't know.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. You didn't know. That's fair. That's fair. It was a testimony of a that's a great point. There's a testimony of right. That would only be just a matter of so you heard. And so what I've heard from others is that and the transcripts are not available online because everybody was underage at the time. But I would think that you could ask it for those to be unsealed because everybody's adults now. And who would really care, whether they're unsealed, unless you cared that it would be discovered that so much was denied throughout the process. But it's my understanding that there was a female police officer who had gone into his car, was, looking for different things, went into his car, found a knife in his glove compartment, and it was a little sticky and put it back. And then she testified, this is all just, my understanding at this point, because we have not seen those transcripts, right? They're not available yet. I know that the family is working on getting those transcripts. It's going to cost them a pretty penny to get them, but it's very important to have those to be able to go forward with these cases. And you can just hope and pray that the transcripts haven't been played with, because I've seen that happen too. But then you hope that there's that recording that is still available and not thrown away. Sometimes the recordings come out different than the transcripts. But so that she testified that that was in his car. And so there was nothing they could do about it. But, it was at this point, it was never found. This is my understanding, but it was very, very dark. Nobody could see what was going on. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. We were in some woods. I mean, it was just a bunch of people in the woods. It was a fight escalated. It initially started with Alonzo, then I ended up getting into the fight. So I started fighting, and then me and the guy is sitting up there fighting. So next thing you know, I'm seeing everybody running out the woods. So I take off running, and I ran on side of Simeon, which was our driver, and I asked him what happened, and he said somebody got shot.
And you had a driver?
Yes.
Smart. Wow.
Excuse me?
Okay. And he said someone got shot. Okay, why don't you continue? You were there. You're the best person to be talking about this.
Yes.
Okay. And so you were trying to leave, right? People were trying to leave at this point, but is this when the police showed up?
I mean, they were already there. When everybody started running, everybody was getting in their cars, and the police was already there. They were at the gate.
And so then they wouldn't let people leave.
We was like from the gate, from where we were, it was probably 100 yards.
Okay. All right. Fairly close. I mean, you can't see, close up from there, but you could see that. Okay. So lights are flashing at that point.
Yes.
Okay. All right, the name of the young man who ultimately was murdered, how, by who, nobody seems to know, is, I believe it's Austin Hatcher,
Austin.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Austin Hatcher, okay. And what did you know of Austin Hatcher prior to this?
I didn't know nothing about Austin Hatcher. I don't think I knew that he played on MacArthur's football team, supposedly. I don't know.
Right. So basically, MacArthur and what was your football team?
Eisenhower.
Okay. So the two teams, like, you were rivals against each other. You were close enough to each other where you might find yourselves in the same place every now and then, like for the homecoming, somebody who's going out with somebody else, it's a place to party, get away, whatever it is, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, but it doesn't mean that you know people by name and you could really say, oh, that's so-and-so, right? Okay. So did you try to leave with your driver at that point?
Yes, we left.
Okay. So they let you go?
Yeah, then nobody stopped us or nothing. Everybody just got in their cars and everybody left.
Okay. Were you able to witness that the police would not let Austin Hatcher's friends bring him to the hospital and that they were trying to resuscitate him?
No, because I didn't even know what happened. I'm the only one, when it escalated, whatever happened, I was the only one that was still fighting. I was like almost the last ones to leave out because me and the guy were still fighting, and I had to run out the woods and catch up with everybody.
Okay, got you. So you were the diehard there, you and him.
Yeah.
Certainly nothing that you were afraid to tell everybody about because it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, they already know. I mean, the dude testified that me and him was fighting and,
Yep.
It was what it was.
So that puts you where you two were, you know what I mean? So who else was in the car with you when you came in and when you left?
It was me, Simeon, and Stanley.
Okay. Okay. And so it turns out, let me get back in here, that the three of you were named initially as suspects, right? And you were brought down for questioning. Were you ever actually arrested?
We turned ourselves in the next day. I mean, every Sunday we go to our Coach Stringer house to watch film for the games. So
yep.
I went to church. After church, picked Stanley up. Him and I, we went to Coach Stringer's house, and Coach Stringer is the one that told us what happened at the party, and he was like, he didn't want anything bad to happen to us, so he wanted to take us up there himself. So we turned ourselves in.
That's a good man. Okay. You do, and what made you turn yourselves in? Did you hear that they were looking for you?
Yes, he's the one told us what happened, because we didn't even know that nobody had got stabbed or died that night or anything like that.
So that was the first you heard of it?
Yeah, that was the first we heard of it. Because,
like I said,
I thought they said someone was shooting. So I know I didn't hear no gunshot, but everybody was running like there was a gunshot. So that's
right.
In my mind, I thought someone was just shooting a gun. So.
Okay. So what? So, right, exactly. Get out of there, right?
Yes.
Okay. So. What was it that, how did, so when you went down there and did the right thing because, you know, they wanted you guys to come and you're just, were there like a bunch of witnesses at that time or were you actually named as witnesses and potential suspects?
And I really don't know what we was named at. I just knew that it was the right thing to do and that we didn't have nothing to worry about because we know the only thing it was just a fight with us. So, I mean, what was
right
to be scared about?
Right, right. Unfortunately, there's a lot to be scared about because look at what happened.
Yeah.
Right?
When we found out when we got there, that's when the tables had turned because we didn't know that, though.
Right. There seems to be a quite a disproportionate number of black young men as opposed to white young men in Oklahoma, even though there certainly are that are wrongfully convicted. I'm finding that out more and more as time goes on. I still believe if they're under pressure, they need to charge somebody. It doesn't matter what color you are or what, but it certainly could, but the socioeconomic class isn't that the other thing, right? But there just seems to be, as these cases in Lawton anyways, that are people that are standing up and bringing their stories forward, that it does tend to be. They are charging young black men. Have you done any research on that? What are you finding that to be?
I mean, that's all over the world. If you look at the population from blacks to whites incarcerated, I mean, it's like we outnumber them like 3-1. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean,
any wrongful conviction is wrong. And, it's any wrongful conviction is wrong.
Well, you can look at the pardons. All these guys got charged, and I mean, now they're getting pardoned, but they didn't serve all this time, and they thinking a compensation of money is going to take that bite that time out, but you can't buy time.
Right. No, you can't. No, you can't. No, you can't. People lose, you know, their loved ones while they're in prison. And, you know, they could have parents that are elderly and pass away. You know, they don't get to raise their children if they have children or you know, have the opportunity to have children and, you know, get married and have children. It's I know that Stanley knows Perry Lott, and are you aware of who Perry Lott is?
No.
Okay, well, he was on this show a couple months ago, and he was wrongfully convicted in Oklahoma as well, and he was finally commutated, but this is the problem. So he is on parole for the rest of his life, Myron. He's on parole the rest of his life unless or until they can find out
who really did it, who really murdered this or raped this person. She wasn't murdered, raped and beat up this woman. Or the governor gives a pardon. So they will not change the conviction to, they won't change like the, you know, you've got the rate of how many how many people that you convict, right? They won't change the conviction to there not being a conviction. So he's out, but he has to get permission. He has to get permission to leave the state. So he's been absolved of the crime. There's no DNA, there's no proof, you know, all the things that need to be met, right?
Yeah.
But he still has to get permission to leave the state. And he's on parole the rest of his life. Do we need reform or not?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, we do.
It's crazy.
We need reform. So, anyways. Okay, so when you brought yourselves in down to Lawton, correct? You went to Lawton?
Right.
Turned yourselves in. Let them know you're, you know, hey, I'm here. You need to talk to me. I'm here, right? What happened?
Yeah. They split us all up because, well, it was me and Stanley. We were only two that turned ourselves in at that time because they caught Simeon the same day, but they caught him in traffic. But he came down as well. They split us all up. They started questioning us and interrogating us.
He was coming in anyways. It's just they got to him first.
They started questioning us. And they asked us what happened the night in question. And we told them our story. So then they brought different people in. Like, it seemed like every 20, 30 minutes, a different person comes in there to talk to us.
Trying to trip you up.
Yes. And then next thing you know, they lock us up, and then they tell us that what they're locking us up for, and it went from there.
Right. And what did they tell you that you're being locked up for?
Well, they told me that I would be locked up for accessory to murder.
Okay. Did they give you any idea what that meant to you as far as punishment goes? And, you know, what did they have on you for that?
Yeah, they didn't say they had anything. They just said that I was there, and they got witnesses that said what happened with the guy, Austin Hatcher, that initially we were the ones that had done it. And
so they lied. Is that it?
That's it.
They lied. So it was right. So if you were there, so were how many others? Did
yeah.
they all get locked yeah. up?
No.
Okay.
I believe it was just me, Simeon, Stanley, and Alonzo, if I'm not mistaken.
And then there was a young lady there too, correct?
Yes. I think
right, and what's her name? We're trying to track her down.
Satchiko?
Yes. Yep. Said that she would come forward as well, and it's my understanding that she would come forward as well and speak as to what the prosecution tried to get her to say.
Mm-hmm.
And she was actually testified. Do you remember her testifying?
No, because every time it was time to go to court and they wanted me to testify, they would never let me go into court. They let me go one time, and they told my mother that I was going to be charged for perjury.
So they're trying to scare you.
Yeah.
I mean, at this time, you're 17 years old, and your mother is just petrified for you, your life, your future, correct? As well
right.
as the other guys.
Yes.
right? Sounds like you come from, you know, decent families. You know, you're doing, you're obviously, you know, you're working hard with your schoolwork, you know, or you couldn't be on the team. You know, you're playing football. You've got bright futures.
Yeah.
And now you're targeted for being a part of a murder.
Right.
A murder, by the way, which when the conviction came down, it's my understanding that Mrs. Hatcher went over to Mrs. Watson and they hugged. She hugged her and said, "We both lost." And as they embraced, "We both lost," because Mrs. Hatcher knew that justice was not done, that this was a shoddy job. Were you aware of that?
No, I wasn't aware of that because on the trial date, they wouldn't let me go in.
Right. I don't understand why you are not allowed to face your accusers. I just don't understand that. That happens far too often.
Yes.
And you should be able to be there so that you can stand up for yourself. Instead,
I was at the courthouse. Waiting, me and the guy that I had fought that night, we were in the same room together. And I was just waiting for my turn, and they told me that they didn't need me to go out there.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. They didn't even want you to go out there.
Right.
So did you actually testified, though, is that right?
The first time, I think it was pretrial. The pretrial.
Okay.
That's when I got on the stand.
Pre-trial.
And then that's when I got on the stand, and then that's when they told me I'd be charged with perjury. The district attorney told me.
Okay, so the district attorney visited you. Was anybody else with you when the district attorney spoke with you initially?
No.
Did they read you any of your rights? Did you were a minor child at the time, legally, or you were not an adult? So was your mother called in? It was just you and the district attorney, or they kept on switching people out, like you said, right? But ultimately, what was it the district attorney told you?
He told me that if I don't tell him what happened, then I'll be spending the rest of my life in prison.
Oh, really? For perjury?
Right.
Okay, so, and what were you supposed to tell him actually happened? Who came up with that story?
I don't even know. He said he told me that he already know what happened. He talked to several people, and everybody's story matched what each of them was talking about. And only one that story didn't add up was my story. And it was just a bunch of stuff. He was just saying half of it I don't remember because it's been so long.
I mean, it's a traumatic time. All of a sudden, go from just being in a fight with somebody at a party, okay, it happens.
Yeah.
It's not the best thing, but it happened, to all of a sudden being called an accessory, and you're going to be in prison for the rest of your life unless you collaborate a story that the prosecution seems to have whipped up.
But like I kept telling him, I was the one that was fighting. There's no possible way that I could possibly know what's going on around me if I'm focused on a fight. How can I know what's going on around me?
Right.
And then we're in the woods, it's dark. You can't really even see. So
right.
And the guy is on the ground.
Yeah. He was on the ground. So you were
right.
Okay. And that guy was not Austin.
No, he wasn't. Austin. No, no.
Okay. Okay. So that was like a side fight that had broken out.
Right. This is
from,
one of the guy I'm talking about is one of the guys that had the bat when we initially pulled up. He was the one that had the bat, started calling us the N-word.
Okay. All right. So, okay. But you both collaborated, you and the other guy that you were fighting. What happened to him?
Mm-hmm. I don't even know.
He was never implicated as far as you know, right? I don't see him as a witness here anywhere.
Yeah, like I said, he was there, but he never went out. Him and me, we were the only two staying in the back in the room, and we couldn't go out. They wouldn't let us go out. They wouldn't let us take the stand.
Okay. All right. So did the prosecutor threaten you? That's what I'm hearing, but I just want to kind of try to confirm this. Did he threaten you with prison for the rest of your life unless you told what he wanted you to tell?
Right.
Okay. Right. At the time, what did you do? Did you make like you were going to go along with him?
Yeah, I mean, I kept telling him the same thing. There's no way that I know who did what when I was busy myself focusing on the fight. I mean, there's no way that I could possibly know what happened. Only thing I can tell you is what I heard. Like
right.
I told him, man, when I ran on side of him, he told me someone was shooting.
Okay. And so when you got up on the stand, how did
mm-hmm.
that go?
I mean,
can you kind of like replay that for us a little bit?
I mean, he just kept on like asking me questions, then he'll flip the question to another question, but it'll be the same question, and then expecting a different answer. And like, he was just trying to cross me up. He was just cross-examining me. And, you know, being young and not knowing the law, you know, I was just answering his questions.
Right. So did you have a lawyer?
No, I didn't have a lawyer because my mother, when she tried to get me a lawyer, the lawyer told my mother that I wouldn't have nothing, I shouldn't have nothing to worry about.
Well, that's interesting. Okay. All right. So ultimately, before you got off of the stand from that hearing, okay, and that was a pre-trial conference? Okay.
Yeah.
What was concluded? Because
I mean,
you were subpoenaed.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. I mean, you know, they just wanted me to recap the whole story. Just from the time we started our day off going to the homecoming, and to what led us to come out there to the party, to when we left the party.
Okay. And the prosecutor at the time was Robert Schulte. S-C-H-U-L-T, Robert Schulte.
Mm-hmm.
You remember him?
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah.
Was he like, what was his demeanor like? Like, was he sly or did he try to scare you? Or, I mean, I know he tried to scare you, but did he do it in more of a threatening way or was it more
yeah,
like?
I mean, anytime you just sit up there and look at me and tell my mother that you're going to charge me for perjury, I mean, that's a threat right there itself.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah. Let me ask you this question: did you ever think that Stanley did it or didn't do it?
Yeah, you know, you always gonna think about that, man. But I know Stanley, man. So we grew up together, and I know his heart, man. And I don't think that's in his heart, man, because he's a good dude, you know. He always been a good dude, man. Since I first met him, he's a character, man. He has a wonderful personality, man, and a great heart, man. You know. And
this situation wasn't normal for him, you know, to be accused of something or to be involved in supposedly violence or, you know, going around slicing somebody up.
Yeah, man, it's just, you know, when you hear about it and when it was over with and you found out what happened to him, man, it really just threw me up because that Anna was my best friend.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm so sorry.
You know, it's like everybody lost, you know.
Yeah. Are you able to visit him at all, see how he's doing? What are your feelings about how things stand now?
You know, I try to keep in touch with him to his mother. I talk to his mother all the time and you know, his family members. And, you know, I'm still close to his family. So, you know, when he called his mom, she'll put him on the phone with me and I'll get to speak to him.
Oh, good. Good. Oh, gosh. Ah, that's very hard. It's very, I mean, I don't know. I'm not in those shoes. But I think that many people can only begin to imagine how hard that must be. You didn't abandon your friend. You didn't, you're there for his mother. You know, you're able to cry on each other's shoulders and then probably, you know, reminisce and might bring some happy tears sometimes too. But what kind of effect has this been on you? You know, you've lost a best friend. You know, you still have your best friend. But what kind of an effect? Like,
I mean, it changed my whole life up because when you're on a path, you're thinking you're going to live out your dream. And, you know, my dream was to play ball. So, you know, when I came back to school, they kicked me out of school. They told me I couldn't even go to school no more, that I had to be homeschooled. They wouldn't even let me play football no more. They told me I was a threat to the school.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we had a conference meeting with my mother, my coach, the whole administrative staff, the whole, like, the principal, everybody, counselor, everybody.
And were they upset about it, that they had to
let you go, so to speak? I mean,
I don't understand how they can rightfully do that because...
Yeah, it kind of hurt me because it seemed like the people that supposed to love me the most, like my coaches and everything, it's like they just turned their backs on me.
Oh, my gosh.
It kind of messed me up.
I was going to ask you if you were in touch with your coach now.
No, I don't even speak to him no more.
Ways.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right,
can I ask you, was the administration, and I try not to make it a race thing, but I'm going to ask you here now. I mean, was the administration, your coach, and, you know, or were they mostly white?
They were all white.
Okay. Wow. Got a big problem. Not a very big problem. So, wow. And so you never thought to fight that finding, or because, I mean, you wound up being... you didn't have any charges pressed on you that stuck, correct?
Right. I didn't have no charges pressed against me, but, you know, like I said,
so
I wasn't able to go back to school. I
had
to be homeschooled. Right after I got homeschooled, I had to
play Oklahoma.
Football. Right.
So that... wow. I mean, I know how hard it was when my son broke his right thumb and he had to take off. You know, he wasn't allowed to play. He could go to the practices, but he couldn't play, you know, just breaking his right thumb, what that did to him, you know. and being out for 8 weeks, but your dreams were crushed.
Yeah.
What were Stanley's dreams?
I mean, Stanley had dreams too. You know, I mean, he had a lot going for himself. You know, he's just an inspired dude. Stanley could do anything he wanted to do. You know, it was like he just had so many options of what he could have did with his life, man. You know, it's sad because he wasn't able to do nothing. He wasn't even able to. It's starting to mess with me now, man. Because
it's hard to go back there, isn't it?
Yeah, man.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. I know it's got to be traumatizing, but you're being very brave and noble. These people want to hear the effect that this has, and you know you could find yourself someday maybe like testifying at a reform or a justice reform hearing, and let it empower you. Let what you know and what you've been through empower you. Because it beat you up. It beat up a bunch of people. Beat up your best friend. But we're not going to give up, okay?
Right.
So what are you doing right now? Are you able to...
Excuse me?
Like, are you okay? I mean, obviously, it's not okay.
I mean, every time I think about that, that'll never be okay, you know? It's like, you know, like losing your brother, you know? I can just imagine from where we at now, if that night never occurred, where we'll be at now, you know? I always think about it, and it kills me because, you know, we could have been successful. We could have been anything we wanted to be, you know? It's like they took that opportunity away from us.
Did you ever see Stanley with a weapon?
No, I never seen Stanley with anything.
Okay. I know this wipes you out even talking about it. And so can you say, like, the same thing goes for, I mean, what do you know about, Simeon and Alonzo and how they were treated?
Yeah,
One of them passed away. Is that correct?
Yeah, Simeon.
Or one of Simeon. He passed away, and
Simeon,
I'm very sorry.
Yeah, Simeon passed away.
Okay. So his life changed from that point?
Yeah. I think all our lives changed from that point. Even the people that wasn't even involved wasn't even there, you know. Just by knowing him, just by knowing Stanley and his characteristics and everything, you know, they know who he is and they know that wasn't for him. You know, a lot of people felt that pain when they offered him that time, you know.
Right. Were you able to graduate from high school?
Yeah, I graduated through homeschool.
Okay. You have a strong mom. She was there to push you through, right?
Yeah, she wasn't going to let me go without that.
Okay, so... let's talk a little bit about Alonzo. Do you know what he's doing now?
No, I haven't spoke to Alonzo since that night.
Really?
Really.
And is there a reason why?
No, it's just, you know,
I just, you know, in my heart, I felt like, man, if whatever he was into or whatever was started up before we even made it there had a lot to do with everything escalating.
The end result.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you, so can you say whether you feel that he was straight up with you guys or not, or, you know,
like
he,
I said, I haven't even talked to him, so I wouldn't even know. I wouldn't even.
And you didn't hear him testify either.
No, I didn't even get to go make it in there.
And that's because they didn't want you to go in there.
Right.
Okay. This is just so tragic. I mean, I can hear it in your voice. And as if you're in prison too.
Yeah.
I feel like you're in prison too.
That's how I feel. Been like that for the longest. I mean, you know, it's like I lived in a dark space for so long, in a stress hole for so long, you know. It's just like I'm finally up in age now to where I'm gradually moving on from it. But, you know, it's still a part of me. As long as he's in there, a part of me still in there, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you gotten into coaching football or, I mean, you don't have any charges against you. So, you know, I mean, are you doing anything that you love doing now?
No, because, you know, when they took that from me, that really just made me bitter towards life. So, you know.
Yeah.
I went down the opposite path of what I was supposed to went down, you know?
Right. Okay. Fair enough. And you know that now. And you're kind of like pulling your life back together.
Oh, yeah. It's all the way on track. You know, I'm up in age now. I got grandkids and kids and, you know, everything. My life is good. You know, I can't complain.
Okay, good. You've got grandkids now?
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool. And you know what? It's like it's the people that you love and people that love you and need you to kind of keep you going. And that's what life is all about. It's about relationships and it's for that reason so much that you're devastated and for, you know, your future, you know, you're a talented young man, his family and a couple of these other guys that.
Yeah, but, you know, your past always can haunt you, you know. So, it was, I lived like that for a long time.
You weren't drinking. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, we weren't drinking. We didn't even drink. That's the whole point of him telling us to come to the side, pull in and park to the side, because I guess he wanted to talk to whoever was in the trailer about what they were going to charge us for not drinking. Because they had a set price already.
Right. Got you. So are you still living in the area?
No, I actually live in Texas. Okay. Right when I graduated, I moved to Texas.
You just wanted to get out of there.
Yeah, I had to go. Like,
okay,
my reasons for being in London, it was shattered, so it wasn't no need to be there no more.
Right.
Especially when people start turning their backs on you, you know, you feel some type of way about that.
Yep.
And, you know, I had a coach wanted to adopt me. The same coach that wanted to adopt me wouldn't even speak to me. He actually asked my mother, him and his wife actually asked my mother, could they adopt me? And she told him no for what? But, I mean, if you go to that route, basically saying that you love me, but if you love me, I mean.
You can stand up for me.
Yeah, it's crazy.
How do you think were you in touch with Stan? I know you said that you talk to him now and then, you know, when you're and you're close with the family. And how does he take it? Like, how do you think his psyche is now? How do you think he is holding up? And
I mean, you know, he don't have no choice but to hold up because Stan is a strong guy, man. He always been strong-willed, so you know, he gonna make the best out of it, no matter what the circumstances or situation is. You know, he has a reason to live. He has kids. He got a wife. He got a mother. You know.
Right.
I mean, he never been the type of guy from what I know just to give up. You know.
Right.
And that's the whole reason why I'm on the phone with you right now.
Right. What would Stanley want to say right now?
He probably want to tell him that he's innocent, that he's been wrongfully charged, and that what they sentenced him is not fair.
Right.
I mean, y'all went off circumstantial evidence. I mean, how can y'all give a person life without parole without no evidence?
Right. So let's get to that. Let's get to that. There was no evidence whatsoever. That's correct, right?
Yeah.
There was just testimony from, I'll put it this way, white people that said he did it. Was that it?
I'm not going to lie to you. I don't even know. Yeah.
But what the prosecutor was trying to tell you was that he did it.
Right.
And everybody's saying the same thing.
Right.
Okay. All right. So it's hard for you to know that. Okay.
Are you?
Yes, Jennifer.
I just wanted to let y'all know that he has life with parole.
This is life with parole.
Yes, ma'am. He has life with parole.
I didn't even know that. I thought it was without.
Okay. I thought it was without too, and I'm sorry, that's an error, and thank you so much. Okay. There's so many of these cases, unless I'm looking at my notes and I have that written down, you know, some are with parole, some are without parole. So I'm glad to hear that's right, and he was just denied parole.
Yeah, he was denied. On June 16th of this year, he was denied without no reason or anything.
Right. So yeah, I'm sorry.
I didn't even know none of that.
It's hard to talk about. And so, what is it now? He has to wait another 7 years.
No, we have to. That was for
conversation.
We have to wait another 3 years.
Okay. So I want to encourage, and we've got more to talk about. But I want to encourage listeners. If you go onto Facebook, you're going to see a page, and it's called Justice for Stanley Watson. Justice for Stanley Watson. And so they're trying to raise some money for. I normally don't talk about this stuff, but they're trying to raise some money for. The transcripts, they're selling, you know, some T-shirts and you can see that, you know, there's an awful lot is shared here. Also, it looks like there was a forum the other night regarding sentencing reform. So whatever, if anybody that's listening to this show, they want to just take a peek at the page and what it's all about, and you know, shares an awful lot of really nice stuff is shared in here on behalf of Stanley, but also, you know, other matters have to do with public corruption. Justice for Stanley Watson, Oklahoma sentencing reform was live. You know, so these are things that you can see from her page, and so I encourage you to go take a look at that. I'll share it on my page too. It's Injustice in Oklahoma exposed. And, you know, if you can help support the wrongfully convicted at 17 for a crime did not commit. Oh, my goodness. And it, you know, and the school didn't back you. Your scholarship was gone. It was taken away. I mean, it just... It's an awful lot to swallow. So there was no DNA. The medical examiner, the initial medical examiner, actually had said, come out and said that it was an impossibility given the height of Stanley and the height of Austin Hatcher, Stanley would have had, Austin was approximately 6 feet tall. I guess Stanley was what, about five, what would five, you say?
5'3"? 5'3". 5'4".
Okay. And that he would have, Stanley is right-handed, is that correct?
Yes.
Or left-handed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
ma'am. So right. So where the stab was on his top shoulder with his back turned, so whoever did this to Austin, they could have reached around from the front, I guess, and that was taken into consideration by the medical examiner. But even if that was the case, it was impossible, to my understanding, from the initial medical examiner, that Stanley could have done this, given the height and the right and left-handedness of it, of where he was stabbed repeatedly. Somebody was very angry. To me, you know, and I know initially, you know, you watch forensic files and all this stuff, and they say, oh, boy, when somebody's repeatedly stabbed, usually, or, you know, they tend to think initially that it is somebody that knows them, that's upset with them for a reason, that there's more to it. It's not just a quick crime, you know, the repeated stabs. And again, not one iota of DNA. Not one. And there was DNA. There was some blood on Stanley's pants. And that was found, or on his clothing, and it was found. And it was actually Stanley's own blood, as it turns out to be. He wasn't afraid to, you know, he had to take everything and hand it over. And did you have to do that too? Did you have to hand over your clothes?
Yeah, they took all our clothes.
Okay, they took all your clothes. There was some blood on Stanley's clothing, and DNA shows that it was his own clothes, his own blood on his own clothes. But it was just from a little wire that was cut from working on his car that cut his hand or something like that, a little flesh wound. But there was no blood that belonged to Austin Hatcher, the victim of this. When this went to trial, the prosecution chose to have another medical examiner testify, which is my understanding they essentially tried to contradict what was initially said by the actual medical examiner himself. So, to my understanding, the DNA was not allowed to go into trial, which means that is exculpatory evidence that was withheld. It was withheld. Something that would say, hey, no. You know, what did the prosecution do? I mean, I don't know for sure. I don't see the transcripts. Did the prosecution say there was blood on his clothes and point to Stanley? anything like that. And we have witnesses saying this, that, and this. I'm sorry?
That's in the rut right now because I don't know where that story has came from, but his clothes were sent and there was no blood actually on his clothes at all found, even his or anybody else's.
Okay. Didn't you tell me last week that there was
no
blood?
No, ma'am.
And it was tested? Maybe that was your mother.
No, because from the day when they have sent his stuff in, they never said any blood was on his stuff or anything.
Okay.
But we went to Oklahoma City and everything, and it came back, and there was none of his blood or Austin's.
Okay. Okay. All right. Let me see. Okay. Right. All right. I'm looking at my notes right now. Took Stanley's clothes. No blood. No DNA.
Yes.
Nothing. Nothing at all. Oh goodness. Forgive me. I should have been. I should have been right on my notes. That's the next one that we're going to be talking about. Where there. Okay. That's the next story. Forgive me. I shouldn't have tried to go by my memory because there's just so many cases like this. So, yes. Yes. Don Guterres, public defender who is no longer practicing, who I, in this instance, refer to as a public pretender because he did not fight diligently on behalf of his client's best interest. He did not bring forward that there was no DNA, no blood. They wouldn't let him talk about it. It's just like being bullied around. Being bullied around. The only thing that they're going to let you hear, you the jury, is what they want you to hear. So they've got this case solved. The mother sued the police department. And one, she sued the police department because they would not let Austin be taken to the hospital when his friends were trying to resuscitate him and wanted to do that. So they waited too long to let them go. You know, I know that that's probably a civil suit, okay, and I can accept that because I would hope that the family would receive something. This really could have been a criminal negligence suit because maybe he wouldn't have bled out. Maybe he would have lived. That's probably why she won. So we have got so many victims here in this case. We've got a man who's suffered in prison, Stanley Watson. We've got Myron Wells. I can hear it in his voice. Can't you? Myron Wells. Ah. We've got a group of kids to men that will never be the same because of one night where there was a fight that broke out. But guess what? Stanley Watson didn't do it. Stanley Watson didn't do it just as much as anybody else didn't do it. Or Stanley Watson did it just as much as anybody else did it. Because the fact is, nobody saw him do it. And there's no evidence. So, it's unjust. Stanley wanted to testify for himself. Now, a lot of times, if you're guilty of something, the public defender or the defense attorney will say, no, you stay put right here, you know, just because of the aura, just the you know, they'll read into it, they'll look into it, and they're doing their job, and they're trying to keep you out of prison, right? Out of jail, out of prison. Well, Stanley wanted to talk for himself. He was able to talk clearly, concisely, defend himself and his life. And that public pretender wouldn't let him. 17 years old. You're entrusting your life with somebody that is claiming to want to help you, is claiming to give you the best advice possible. To our listeners, to our advocates, to other victims, to our witnesses, we're working very, very hard. We're collecting affidavits, and this is formally going to be out very soon. We're going to do something about this. And as soon as we work our way up the ladder, with the assumption, unfortunately, we hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. We work our way up that ladder where the complaints have gone out within Oklahoma and goes up to the AG, good old Mike Hunter. And when he denies or says he can't help you, or this cookie cutter trying to push you back somewhere else, we have this evidence of all these affidavits of the Attorney General refusing you help, of your representatives being reached out to and no one's helping you, of if it's the Judicial Oversight Committee because the judge did something wrong to deny due process, if it is the prosecutor, if it is your public pretender or a well-paid defense attorney, if they're working against you when they're supposed to be working for you, that's not okay either. And then that goes to, because they work for you. You've got to remember that. And also, listeners, get in writing. In Oklahoma, you don't have to have a contract. But don't you dare, if you dare to use an Oklahoma attorney, you make sure that you get that contract in writing. You don't have to have it. And they can just say, oh, we didn't agree to this, we didn't agree to that. And I suggest, if you are going for an attorney, that you find somebody outside of Oklahoma and you vet them well. You do not ask them, beg them to take the case. You interview each other. But you can also represent yourself. And in Oklahoma, sometimes that is the best thing to do because you won't screw yourself over. It's hard work. It's hard. Myron.
Yes.
What kind of advice do you have for any of the listeners? What kind of advice do you have, given the experience that you're living through and that Stanley's gone through? What would you say to them with what you know now?
I mean, just basically, man, just stick to yourself, man. Stick to what you know. Don't be out there doing nothing that you shouldn't do. Don't hang out with a crowd of people, man. Don't let nobody entice you to do nothing. I mean, just stay positive, man. Just focus on your goals and achieve whatever it is that you want to do in life, man, and stick to that.
Do the right stuff.
Yeah, just do the right thing in life.
You know, my parents used to always tell me, they'd say, keep your nose clean, keep your nose clean. And, you know, as a kid, I knew it was just like stay out of trouble, right? You know, but it's kind of like, it's not just a kid thing. That's a, you know, just stay out of trouble. Just, I mean, the thing is, you also have to stand up. You have to stand up for yourself, and you have to stand up for other people when you see something wrong is happening. So, yeah, keep your nose clean. Stay out of trouble. Do the right things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, easy as hell to get into, but hard as hell to get out of. So, you know, and I'm a living witness of that.
Everything happens for a reason, whether we know it or not.
Yeah.
And your testimony here on Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard and your story is told, has really helped open up the gates even more for others that are listening to you talk. It's empowering others. I will go forward. I don't need to be anonymous. It's time I stood up. I saw this. I saw that. We got somebody that.
Me personally being anonymous is like you got something to hide. See, me personally, I don't have nothing to hide. You know, I mean it is what it is.
So you wouldn't have changed anything.
Excuse
Jennifer,
me?
What are you? So you wouldn't have changed anything except obviously you wouldn't have gone there that night. But you wouldn't have changed how you handled it. Okay, here are some kids in the background, huh?
Yeah, that was my grandkid.
You're healthy ones. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I want to thank you, Myron, and I'm going to ask you also, please don't be a stranger. We'll be in touch, and hopefully you'll be in touch as well.
Anytime you need me, I'm there, man. I mean, especially if it's for Stanley. And
Thank you.
Hey, Jennifer, you're going to have to send me that website.
Okay. So thank you very much for coming on, Myron. Thank you, Jennifer, for getting this information. We still love to speak with the young lady who never showed up in the docket as a witness
I'm a friend on Facebook. I can try to get a hold to her.
Yeah, please do. Love to hear more. Yeah, if you could, that would be great because I'd be happy to extend this. So again, time is up, and I want it for now. And I want to thank you so much, Myron. I mean, I'm just so glad that you're here and the way that you shared. It's just, you know, it's raw, it's true, and it's life changing. So thank you for being willing to do that with us tonight. Thank you, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Janet Watson as well. Marty Oakley, thank you for having us on your show. We'll be back on. This will be on 89.9 FM KLRB, Christian Lighthouse Christian Radio on Thursday with another show, same time. And then back here again on Sunday and Tuesday. I'm Tanya Hopper. I'm your host. God bless and good night.
Okay.